and welcome to another edition of Broadway Babies. I'm Stephanie Anderson.
And I'm Noelle Hannibal.
And today we have on our program the wonderful, wickedly talented Jason Graw. Hi, Jason. How are you?
Nicely done, Steph.
Thank you.
I'm so good. I'm just great.
And I'll just let you know, Jason, that you know we tend to giggle, and so I will edit out those the giggling and the long pauses and the ums and hums and things like that. Just
please don't, because you know everything is on mute. I'm like everything we do now. You got to push mute because the laugh covers up the Zoom thing, you know, so it covers up your next line. So you can't ever hear anybody laugh anymore. I miss standing in front of an audience and hearing real laughter. So
feel free to
just laugh away. I will laugh at you, but only at you.
Never with us.
Never with you.
Works for me. So hilarious. All right. So, Jason, would you just talk a little bit about your, beginnings of getting into the biz, so to speak? Like, where did you start? Did you start at a younger age? How did you start?
Well, I did. I grew up in, Tulsa, and, which is a slut backwards, by the way.
Nice. Keep it in.
I'm keeping that in. Because I never knew that. And
yeah.
I know some other people from Tulsa, so.
Oh, just think about that, will ya?
All right.
It makes a lot of sense.
It does. It explains so much about me. But, yeah, so I got my beginning at the Tulsa Little Theater. And so I was doing stuff. My mother was a dancer in New York. And so she danced, she was show busy. And then she gave it up to get married and have kids and do all that and move to Mid-America. But she still continued to perform and she danced in companies, like local companies. And she played Tessie Tura in Gypsy at the Lyric Theater in Oklahoma City, where we lived for a while before Tulsa. Mm-hmm. And then I got to do Gypsy with her. I was a newsboy with Sam Harris. And
oh, wow.
I know, we were newsboys. And my mom, again, played Tessie Tura. She was like the resident stripper of Oklahoma. So that was kind of cool. So, you know, I started at that. It was just like, it was so fun. And to start with Gypsy and to see your mom doing Gypsy, you know, that's just like, that's going to make any kid stage struck. And so I was doing theater, you know, a little bit when I was younger. But all the while I was doing theater, I was playing oboe. And so I was really serious about my oboe. And so I had theater going on and oboe going on. And then when I went to college, I was an oboe major at SMU in Dallas. And even though I knew that it was a great theater school, I thought, I'm going to go to SMU and study oboe, which was kind of random. So knowing all the while that I was going to be like veering over to the theater. And so I was trying to go back and forth between the theater department and the music department. And then I went and auditioned for Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, where they were one of the first musical theater majors back in the 70s, in the Punic Wars. And so we went, and I got accepted there. And so that's where I completely focused on theater.
Nicely.
Isn't that fascinating?
It is,
because I did know that you were really like into the oboe. I did not know that. So that's
Stephanie, there's so much you don't know about me.
Uh-oh.
my oboe really is, it's an extra appendage. I actually play it. Play it in a lot of my shows. I take it everywhere. My parents spent so much money on oboe, buying me the oboe, taking me to lessons, the reeds. You got to make those little reeds.
Yeah, and, it's not cheap.
So it's not. And so I put it aside for a few years, and then I was like, I brought it back out, and now I play it in most every concert and cabaret thing I do. And, you know, I feel like they spent so much money, it's the least I could do. Serenade you with my oboe.
Soothing sounds of the oboe.
Yes, it's very soothing. Like a duck being run over.
And this is why he has his own show. This is why you go see cabaret. This kind of stuff.
Remember cabaret.
Yeah.
Yes.
Remember just live anything?
Yeah, barely.
Yes.
I mean, 2020 has been like 10 years long so far.
At least.
Yeah.
And there's still 3 months left.
Right.
And it's going in waves, isn't it? It's like, it started out like, well, this is weird and kind of fun. Like, we're all doing this together, and we've never been through anything like this. It was kind of fun and communal. It felt like part of the world, you know? And then it started getting annoying. And then it was like in the summer. It was like the summer. We kind of get to be slobs in the summer and kind of lay low. So it wasn't horrible. But then for me, the fall hit, and I was like, okay, back to school, back to work. Yeah. Got to go make money.
Stop the world. I want to get off. Yeah,
yeah,
we're good.
Stop the world. I want to get off. And it was like, oh. It's still going on. Shit.
Yeah, and it's now the second wave is hitting.
Oh. Yes, because now everybody's back in the house, or they're, for some lame reason, in a classroom, you know.
Yeah, I know. I know the school thing. I'm like, I don't understand. It's like they changed the rules in Montreal over the weekend. We went from like yellow alert to orange alert, which means that, you know, instead of having 250 people at some sort of event, there can only be 50 people. And instead of having 10 people at Rosh Hashanah, you can only have 6. But we can still have sporting events, schools, and, you know, it's
bizarre.
Like, it makes zero sense.
It's so halfway there doing it. My friends, I have friends in England, and they just changed now the bars. They have a curfew
10
the
p.m. right?
Yes,
at 10 instead of 11.
Yeah,
because we all know that hour from 10 to 11,
that extra hour
packed with COVID. It's really difficult. It's difficult for all the people that are following the rules than to have all the people that are not following the rules. And
right.
You know, and it's become so divisive. I'm so sick of it. I'm just sick of it. The only good thing is I run 4 days a week over at the Reservoir, and most people are wearing masks, but there are still runners and bikers that go by without their masks on, and they can't see me as I snarl at them under my mask. So I guess that's good. Although I have yelled at a few people.
I'm not like, I used to not, you know, it's like I would never not say anything and just, you know, go about my business, but screw that. Like this, I want this to be over.
It's not going to be when you have people who don't care. Like really just don't care.
I know. I want to do the 3 shows I had to cancel. I want
to
do that.
I would love to do a show. I would like to go see a show.
Yeah.
Remember that? This is a great podcast. This is great. Broadway Babies.
This is gonna be
angry,
trimmed.
This is the angry episode.
We're gonna save this for the section for the blooper reel, because people will think it's so funny.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. But we're getting it out. We're getting it out.
Well,
I feel like we needed a little release there. So
that's true. Like,
hey, I did a job. I had a job, which was thrilling. And we did on one of our, you know, many Zoom things that we're all doing these days. I did Forever Plaid off Broadway, and we had the 30th anniversary reunion.
Right.
Of it, and David Engel and Larry Rabin and Guy Strowman and Stan Chandler and I, we got back together, and I hadn't seen them all. I've kept in touch with them, but we hadn't all been like in the same room.
Room.
Zoom room. And so we've had this great fun reunion. 30 years ago, we opened off Broadway. And then Carolyn Burns, do you know Carolyn, Stephanie? She runs the Rubicon Theater. She's the artistic director of the Rubicon in Ventura.
The name's familiar though, but I don't
know. She's great. It's a great theater and it's survived. It's gone on for, I don't know, it's 20, 25 years. It's doing really well. And I've worked up there frequently and they've been having a drive-in concert series at the Ventura County Fairgrounds. And so she saw our Zoom reunion. And so she said, what about you guys want to be part of our concert series? And you can't do the show because then we would have to pay equity. Plus we had to do it socially distanced. The audience was in their cars, which was great. And so they heard us through the radio. We stood on stage. It was a huge stage with Jumbotron screens behind us and all that. And so we did a concert version of Forever Plaid. And we did three concerts. I have not done that show since 1991.
Wow. And I got
that somebody raised those keys on me. Because they were higher than
they
were.
Did I have them?
I was like, did I sing this stuff?
I don't remember singing that.
Oh my God. And somebody said, the music director said, Jason, could you do that last note straight tone? And I just threw my head back and laughed. Oh my God. It's like, you're lucky you're getting it in any tone.
Right?
Straight, gay, vibrato, wobbly.
Straight tone. All right. Good on you. I'll try it.
Don't you have a little auto tune for me? But I got to tell you, so we rehearsed over at Stuart Ross's house, who's close to where I live. And so, and you know, we were very careful. The guy playing Jinx flew in from New York, and we were all very careful with our masks and keeping distance. We didn't touch each other's props or mic stands. You know, it was fun, but it was also, you spent a lot of energy not doing anything wrong, you know. But it just was so great to see people and to sing together. And, you know, at the same time of how excited I was to do it, and it was a week between our first rehearsal and our final concert. And, you know, I was so excited to do it and do it. But the first day of rehearsal, I was a little like, oh, I have to get up and leave my house and warm up. Like, I got to go do something.
I have to put on pants.
I know. It was just like that, the phrase, the best way to make an actor bitch is to give him a job.
You give him a job.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was fun. So it was 1 week, an outlet of 1 week. And the only response we got were horns honking and lights flashing. And
that's a good thing.
Well, it was a little off-putting, like the first night I was like.
Oh, sure.
What the hell?
Honk, honk, shut up, honk, honk.
I know. And then by night two, I was like, bring it on. I love those car horns.
But you get used to it.
Like, I loved it. I was living for it. It's like, this is the most reaction I've had in 6 months. So
right.
I do the videos. They keep me going. And I love, you know, helping out theater companies and the Actors Fund. I've done a lot of stuff like that. But it's so hard. I mean, I just love doing it and having something to live for. But then you send the video off and you don't get any response. And I, as an actor, I do half my work when the audience is there because they inform you what works and what doesn't work, most importantly. So you listen to them and then that spurs you on to, you know, go further. So we don't have any of that. I just crave getting to be in front of an audience and work with actors in the flesh again. I can't wait. Just chomp a bit.
Me too.
Talking about Forever Plaid, I'm just gonna backtrack a little bit. How did you get involved in the original Off-Broadway production? How did that come about?
Well, I had worked with the musical director, James Raitt, the beautiful, handsome, incredibly talented James Raitt, who was John Raitt's nephew.
Okay.
And Bonnie Raitt's cousin. And James and I met doing a Broadway show, which started out Off-Broadway, called Stardust. And it was a review of Mitchell Parrish material. And Mitchell Parrish wrote the lyrics. It was like Sophisticated Ladies, but not quite as good. And it was like he wrote the lyrics to Sophisticated Lady and Moonlight Serenade and you know, Sleigh Ride and Stardust and, you know, a lot of incredible old songs from the 30s and 40s. So we did this off-Broadway review, and it was weird because 4 out of 6 of us in the cast all went to Cincinnati Conservatory. So that was really bizarre. And then Andre DeShields was in it, and a singer, Michelle Beautier, who was a big cabaret performer at the time. Now I think she's a secretary. She got like all the best reviews of the show. She was like the one, but we were all like show busy, and it was all kind of these like great poppy songs, but we were all like selling them. And then Michelle would just kind of plop out and just sing them. She did nothing, and we'd all get so annoyed by her, and she's the one that like totally stole the show. So but now she's a secretary, so whatever. So anyway, so James did the beautiful arrangements for it, and after we finished Stardust, he said, you know, I'm working on this show for Ever Platt, and they're doing a production of it in New Jersey, and he told me the premise, and so I went and auditioned for it, and you know, it was a send up of 4 guys singing groups from the 60s and all that, and I knew nothing about all that, but I was good at close harmony singing and all that, so he said, you know, this would be a good fit. So we did it. I got cast, and we did it in New Jersey. It was very different than what it ended up being, but it was a 2-act play about this reunion of this 4 guys singing group in one of the guys' basements, and it got pretty much creamed by all the reviewers. Like, they were all like, this thing is no good. And the producer took his name off the show. And then they were doing, like, a few months later, they were doing, the guys that wrote the Taffetas, they were bringing in, you know, the Taffetas. Do you remember that show? This is, like, all before your time, I think. But the Taffetas was a 4-girl singing group show. And so they had it was a hit off Broadway, and they were trying to do the male version, which was called The Cardigans. And so Stuart Ross, the creator, said, all right, they want to bring this show in. And we came first. Forever Glad came before both of those shows. And so I want to get our show into Steve McGraw's, which was the supper club on 72nd and Broadway. And he said, I'm going to go back to my original concept. It's about 4 guys who were killed on their way to their first singing gig. And they never got to do the gig in life. And due to a hole in the ozone layer, they get to come and perform the show they never did in life. And that's what this is. And I said, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Sign me up. I'm available. So we started as a workshop, and it opened, and it was just a huge hit. And I left after a year because I'd done the New Jersey company and I'd done the workshop, and then I ran a year and then I went off and did other things. But it ran for like close to 5 years on off Broadway, and then they did it everywhere. And so it was a blast. It was a very important time, you know. We were on the Joan Rivers show and the Today show and the Tonight show and Hirschfeld's. I mean, it was really the toast of New York for a long time, and it was really thrilling. It was my first hit. It was kind of a game changer for me. Like, oh, so this is what it's like to be in a really good show. Like. I'd always wondered.
Wow. Yeah, I actually have friends. Well, at the time, in the 90s, like around that time-ish, I was working in children's theater. And a lot of the teens, you know, a lot of the teens were into what was new now, all that kind of stuff. And Forever Platt was on that list of shows that they absolutely love.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to go to New York because I want to see this new show. Stephanie, you got to tell them to tell you about this new show.
Sorry, I know. It was weird. It became like this weird Platt fraternity. I remember I was in the John of the Detroit airport. And I was just like minding my own business, going to the bathroom. And this guy, like 2 urinals down, like smiling at me. And I smiled back like, okay, hi. And he goes, I'm Jinx from Atlanta. Oh, God. Another Plaid. They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. Yeah. It just really has. And it still has a huge following, like huge.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the. Yeah.
it was a phenomenon because it the musicality of the show is great. So just the musicianship was spectacular. The arrangements that James did were so good, and the songs were great. And so, you know, but it was funny, and it was about they were dopey, squeaky clean guys, and it really was kind of making fun of those old groups, but it kind of hit people on different levels. Some people looked at it as, you know, being this satirical lampoon of the groups, and older people came and just thought it was a very affectionate, loving tribute to the old groups. So it hit everybody on different levels. So it, you know, yeah, it was great. It's a phenomenon. It's pretty much a hit everywhere it goes.
Yeah.
It was a flop in San Francisco. It was a flop in San Francisco, and that's really the only town I know, because that's a tricky town. You're never sure about San Francisco, what they're going to love and what they're not going to like. And they were surprised because they were planning on sitting down there for a really long time, and the reviewer just didn't like it, and they couldn't get an audience for it. But every other town, I've directed it in a couple cities, and it was game changers for both of those towns. You know, it's a great show, and Stuart Ross did quite well. The creator of it.
Yeah.
I can see his house from here, and it's huge.
Ginormous. I have to ask you about Hello Mudda, Hello Fada, because...
Must you? Do you have to?
I really do. I literally wrote in my notes, tell me more, because... I annoyed everybody that I knew when I was a child by singing that song.
Nice.
Which I learned at summer camp. And I really, I remember having like the lyrics written in a notebook, and I was super obnoxious about it. I didn't know that there was a musical.
Neither.
So this is why I need you to tell me more.
I love that. You're young to be singing Hello Mudda, Hello Fada, because that was those Alan Sherman albums, you know, where he lampooned all those things. They were so popular in the 60s, and everybody had those albums. That they went by me. I'd heard them, but our family was not, you know, they weren't listening to Alan Sherman. We were listening to Brahms and Beethoven. We had a very nerdy family. But,
Oboe.
I don't want to say they were nerdy. Yes, they
Oboe. Oboe. That's right.
But we did like our classical music. We had a lot of classical music. But so I knew it was a phenomenon. It kind of went by me. So they were doing this review of his songs. They put it together at Circle in the Square off Broadway, and I auditioned for it. And, you know, it had a plot, and I was thrilled when I got it. I thought, oh my God, this will be so fun. And it was a great cast. Mary Testa played my wife. I played Barry Bachman, who was like the hero. And it went from Barry's life. It was a review, but it was like, you know, there was a little plot that kind of, you know, tied the whole thing together. And so it started from Barry being born to Barry dying and or becoming an old man. And Tova Feltsche was in it, and Paul Kreppel from It's a Living, and Steve Berger. I knew everybody. Mary Testa and I, who played the two, you know, the lovebirds, the two leads, we were the only goyim in it. And so, you know, we didn't get like some of the jokes because very Jewish humor.
Yeah.
And so we were like, you know, they were always having to explain it to us, and we would be very annoyingly goyim. And, they served bagels on our first table read. And we were like, what are these funny rolls with the holes in them? We were just being just obnoxious. We were really playing up the goyim thing like way too far, but we enjoyed it. So yeah, it was really fun. It was a fun review, and it ran. I mean, I have to say we did the first read through, and I called my agent at intermission at the like halfway point in the read through, because I didn't totally get it. And it's all these silly songs. And I was like, can you get me out of here? I don't think this is going to be any good. Like, what am I going to do? And then we started putting it together, and Michael Leeds directed it. And it just was so much fun. And it had heart. And people love those songs. And Alan Sherman had a huge, huge following, as you know. And so we had a really good run. It ran like close to a year. And I had a ball. And it was fun. All of us were a little surprised, like when the New York Times gave it like a complete rave. We were all like, wow. And I remember just turning to Tova Feltsche in the middle of it. And every time you say Tova Feltsche, I feel like I've sneezed. Tova Feltsche. Tova Feltsche. And I just said, you know what? This material is wackadoo, but I said, we got to play it like we're doing Hamlet. I think we got to like take this stuff seriously. We can't just like, you know, Harvey and Sheila, Harvey and Sheila. I mean, every song is like this ridiculous lampoon, but people went crazy hearing those songs again. And I loved it because a lot of his satirical lyrics were set to classical songs. Popular classical songs. So I love that because it hit me in that real house. But it was fun. I'm sorry we never did an album of it.
Yeah.
Recording together. But we had fun. It was so much fun. It was ridiculous. We had a great time.
I love ridiculous shit.
I have to tell you, thank you for asking me because I don't think anybody's asked me about Hello Mudda, Hello Fada.
Yes.
You know, 10 years.
At Broadway Babies, we strive to be different.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
Oh, and by the way, I got nominated to blow smoke up my own ass. I got nominated for a Drama Desk Award for Best Actor. And it was hilarious because it was me and Brent Carver, who was the lead in Kiss of the Spider Woman, and Martin Short from Goodbye Girl, and the lead in Blood Brothers. So I did not worry about preparing an acceptance speech. But it was an honor to be nominated.
Of course, absolutely, always.
I was such a distant fifth.
So tell us a little bit about your collaborations with Faith Prince.
Oh my God, we just go back. We go back. She's very important. She's an MVP in my life. And we met in college at Cincinnati when I transferred there as a sophomore. And she was there in the music theater department. And we actually went out on a date. But something was missing.
Wonder what that was.
No. But I loved her so much. She knew the whole campus. She was a sophomore advisor. And no, she was a resident counselor. Is that what they were called? Resident advisor.
RA.
Yes.
Yeah,
RA.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was an RA. So she invited me to go to the homecoming dance. And so I went with her to the homecoming dance. And I just loved her. She was daffy and fun and outgoing. And she and I really first connected in jazz class. And Jimmy Truitt, who used to dance with Alvin Ailey, he had a modern jazz class that we would do 3 days a week on Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 9 o'clock. And so, you know, he would do this thing where you'd have to sit in wide second and go down to the floor, touch your chest to the floor. And Faith and I were always on the back row because modern jazz was not our forte and modern dance. And we couldn't get down like, we were like, the way our bodies are, we could get down like maybe 2 inches from being completely perpendicular to the floor. We were like, and so we would just look at each other trying to like get down. And some of these people were just flat on the ground and we were just be up with our stiff back, just laughing and looking at each other, feeling like losers. Right? Really also?
Yeah, yes. I'm right there. I'm right there with you. Yeah.
Oh my God. It was horrible. So, and then our first show was Cabaret. We did the movie version of Cabaret, totally illegal, but we did it. And I played Fritz, who was the guy that was, you're not supposed to think he was Jewish. And then he was with Natalia Berenson in the movie. And then he says, I am a Jew. And Faith was a Kit Kat girl. She was like pole dancing. And she was like a, you know, virgin from Roanoke, Virginia. So, you know, she was like doing serious pole dancing and it was fun. So that's where we first met and we were, you know, really good friends in college. Then we both moved to New York. She was a year ahead of me and we did 3 off-Broadway shows together, I think. 2 off-Broadway shows and a bunch of readings. And we'd see each other, do benefits and all that stuff. And then she went and got her Tony, and I went and didn't get my Tony. And then, you know, we went in our separate directions. And then we hooked up. We didn't see each other for a while. And then we did a benefit for 42nd Street Moon Theater Company in San Francisco, where I work a lot. And it was a Jerry Herman gala, and she and I were the special guests. And so we had really hadn't seen each other in like 5 or 6 years. And we just kind of combusted. It was like we were together and it just went. And we said, we better do a show. And so we put together a show, and we have remained bosom buddies ever since. And that was, yeah, it was like, it's been at least 10 years. And she was the minister at our wedding, at my husband's and my wedding.
Oh, wow.
I know.
I love that.
She was an amazing minister with a name like Faith.
You should right?
right? You can't go wrong. You really can't.
I will. And I want to tell you about this other thing she and I have been doing for 6 months during the quarantining. Like, you guys have come up with this wonderful podcast. And my main thing that I've done to reinvent is I'm taking a writing class. And I got Faith to take it with me. And so we've been taking this class, Claudette Sutherland, who was the original Smitty in How to Succeed in Business in the 60s, for God's sake. She worked with Bob Fosse. She now lives in LA, and she teaches writing, and I've known her in different circles, and she was always like, you need to come take a class, because, you know, you're right. And I was like, yeah. And I finally, you know, had no excuse not to, and I've been doing it solid. And so Faith's been doing it, and it's been great. It's just something new, you know.
Yeah.
And it's also something to get excited about and to work toward and all that. So, Faith and I, we get to see each other once a week on Zoom with that. So that's been fun.
I know that this podcast is called Broadway Babies. And I know that we've talked about things that have absolutely nothing to do with Broadway. But one of the most important things about you that has nothing to do with Broadway is that you're the voice of the Lucky Charms leprechaun. And that brings me great joy.
Same.
Great. I have had many a box of Lucky Charms without milk. I have mimicked the Lucky Charms leprechaun. I even went so far as to move to Dublin, Ireland for 4 years in the 90s.
Oh, my
relevance,
God.
Relevance.
That's expensive.
I would really like to know. I mean, obviously, it was something you got called in for. Tell us a little bit about how you became the Lucky Charms leprechaun.
Noelle, I think you're a bit of a fanatic, maybe.
Maybe a little bit. Those marshmallows just put me over the moon.
Well, they are a lot of sugar.
And it's got plenty of marshmallows.
There's a lot of sugar in them, they're marshmallows.
Oh, yeah.
I do have.
Yes!
Oh, nice. I can't see how huge that box is, but it's huge. Okay, so first of all, I was the Lucky Charms leprechaun.
Right.
And I was the first replacement of the guy that I grew up with, the guy that had been doing it forever. I can never think of his name. But he did it forever. And then I think I was doing Hello Mata, Hello Fada when I got it, I think. But I just went in and, you know, I auditioned for it. They wanted us to sound just like the guy that had been doing it. And I always enjoyed Lucky Charms when I was a kid. But then, you know, at that time of my life, I wasn't really eating Lucky Charms. And so they wanted us to sound just like him. And I hadn't been watching Saturday morning cartoons, so I was like, what am I going to do? I don't know how this guy sounds. And I'm in the casting room and with all these like leprechaun wannabes. And that's when you got to go to a casting director's office and sit with your sides and then go in to be recorded and have like the director and a writer there and to work with you. It's like, it was great. I mean, those, I miss those days a lot.
Yeah.
And so Ken Jennings, who's a friend of mine, you know Ken Jennings, he was the original Tobias in Sweeney Todd on Broadway. He did Urinetown. He's really good, really great actor. And he's kind of a leprechaun of a man himself. I tower over Ken Jennings. And I'm 5'7" and a half, so go figure. So anyway, he came out of the room and he was still in character because he's like way more intense of an actor than I am. And so he was still in character and he goes, "Oh, Jason, how are you? Oh, it's so nice to see you. You're looking great today. Oh, it's so great to see you. Look, I can't stop talking this way. Good luck." And he left. And then I went in and I just basically imitated Ken Jennings and I got the part.
Nice.
Is that a horrible story?
I love it.
I really did though. I just didn't know the rhythm and I wasn't sure where I was going with it. And then I was like, oh, I'll just imitate Ken. So I guess I imitated Ken better than he did. It was a great gig, though. Let me tell you, it was a great gig. I think I worked like 6 days a year, maybe. And
right.
I introduced many shapes. I introduced the rainbow and the balloon and the pot of gold. That was a big one. And yeah, it was fun. It was really fun. And then I moved out to L.A., and I was still, they would like phone patch me in from L.A., with all the kids and the clients in New York and all that stuff. And that went on. And I did it for 5.5 years. And then they fired everybody from General Mills and they got a whole new staff. And so my agent called and said, they need you to come back to New York to be available to do this in New York now. And I was doing a TV series on Showtime called Rude Awakening. And I couldn't get out. So I had to let it go. And then Rude Awakening stopped. And then Lucky Charms continues.
And Lucky now Charms I, forever.
I eat tricks. I don't eat Lucky Charms.
Just defiant.
I don't eat Lucky Charms. Well, you know.
Defiant. I was listening to the guy because it keeps popping up during Judge Judy, which is my favorite TV show. And it keeps popping up. It keeps popping up. And I'm like, oh, the guy's fine, but he's no me. If I may, but I'm not bitter.
You may. Proceed.
I still got it. My last one was, "There to me, eight magical marshmallow shape. It's magically delicious." I mean, I still got it.
I can still do it. Yeah,
I can do it. I still got it.
You have still got it.
By the way, you said that you went to Dublin. So I had a gig in Dublin, like. 4 years ago and to do a recording, and I had not been to Dublin. Oh my God. I cried when I left Dublin. It was so beautiful. But I had been rolling my R's as the Lucky Charms leprechaun. I would be like, "It's me. It's a great day to," you know, I would just do these little things. They don't roll their R's.
No, they
in
don't.
Ireland.
That's
nobody
Scottish.
Ever told me. They're Scottish.
What's it say? Scottish. Scotland.
And Liverpudlian maybe a little bit, but not Irish. And I was really a little mortified. I was like, well, I had a few of the R's that I would roll from time to time.
I don't think the kids noticed. I didn't.
The kids
didn't even notice.
Neither did the General Mills people.
Neither did
I cried when I left Dublin. We were there. I was recording Jerome Kern's Roberta. And it was so random that we went to Dublin to record it. But I guess the studio and the musicians were all much cheaper than if we did it in the States. And I was there for like a week and a half. I got per diem, but I was recording all the time and rehearsing. And so my husband went out and spent all the per diem. And he like went to all the museums and libraries and everything while I was recording. But it was okay. But I cried when I left. It was just beautiful.
So
we did have a couple of days to go drive around and go to Kilkarney and, you know, all those beautiful places. And,
yeah. It's so beautiful. And the people are just, I remember when I went there, which was the first time I went there was the year before I moved there. And my friend and I were going, our plan was to backpack all around Ireland, which, you know, Ireland, you can get from one side to the other in about a minute and a half. But we were like, we bought these like backpacks and sleeping bags and we're going to stay in hostels and, you know, backpack across the country. And we took the bus from the airport into town and we didn't know how to get to the place we were staying. And we asked this lady, can you tell us where Dame Street is? And she's like, hey, where are you going? And we're like, oh, we're going to whatever the name of the hostel. Ah, come on there, I'll take you. You know, and she like literally walked us to the door and like left us there, you know, so nice. And the very first day we were there, we met some really good looking musicians. And so we took a flat in Dublin for 2 months instead of backpacking around the country.
That's a whole nother podcast.
Is a whole nother podcast.
The end.
Yeah, the end. I fell in love. I mean, I just fell in love with Dublin and the people and the music scene, particularly like the musicians that I was playing gigs with. Some have achieved great success, like Oscars and Tonys. Glenn Hansard from who wrote the music for Once, co-wrote the music for Once.
Yep, I knew that.
And I mean, I used to busk with Glenn, and we played like tons of shows together. I would video. I had one of those big camcorders, like the full size VHS tape. So I would film his band's gigs for him, you know. But yeah, I just when I think about that time and like all of the art I was exposed to living there compared to, you know, yes, there's a lot of art in LA, but it's very widespread. And in Dublin, it's like all concentrated in this one little bubble of Grafton Street. And it was just, I miss it. It's been, you know, however, 25 years or whatever, but I'm dying to go back.
Hey, by the way, Stephanie, how's your mom?
She's good. She's...
Is she okay?
Yeah.
I met her outside of Wicked.
Yeah. Yes, you did. Let me tell you, my mom is the reason why I think I'm in the business anyway, but because on Saturdays, long story short, on Saturdays when I was a kid, my mom would take me to some sort of art, whether it was a museum or a show, if a show was in town or whatever, or a concert or whatever. She's the reason why. So when we go to see shows, like my mom is not, well, she's critical. I'm not going to lie. She's critical. she really is. I'm not going to lie. It's the Virgo in her. So Pip, you guys came to town. Pip messaged me. He's like, well, I'm in town. I've got two tickets. Do you want to come see the show? I'm sorry. Do I want to come see Wicked? let me think. Yes. So, I told my mom, I'm like, Mom, you've not seen the show yet. You're going to love this show. This is like, I mean, on a grand scale, she loves grand. So this was like right up her alley. You know what I mean? Like, and then, we're sitting in the seats and we're looking through the program. I'm telling her, oh, I know him. I'm like, it's Jason, look, it's Jason. And then the show starts and that's gonna kill me, but who was Elphaba?
Jack Burns.
Yeah, it was Jackie Burns. We talked about last week. Yeah, Jackie Burns and Carl Lindsay, right?
Yes, what a combo.
Yeah.
What a combo those two were.
I mean, what? So Jackie comes on, opens her mouth to sing, and my mom grabs my arm. She goes, this girl is good. I said, oh, you just wait. This is nothing. Like, because the song she was singing was like, I think the Wizard and I, you know, that was her first, that's the first big number. I was like, oh, this is nothing.
Just wait.
End of act one. And in my head, I was like, the end of act one is going to be so good. Because you know how you can kind of tell, like when... If you know a show and you go and see it and then you see the person singing, you're like, oh, they are going to kill this song. Yeah. You can feel it.
Yeah.
And I told my mom, like, oh, this is nothing.
Yeah.
And then, well, with the opening with Kara, and she's like, oh my God, she's so cute. I'm like, oh, you can show, I'm so happy.
Wait.
Right. I was like, it's nothing. Are you?
Just wait till the regular.
Oh my God. It was so funny.
She made me like,
I had a hard time just standing on stage with her. I'd look at her every time that we were like, I'm sorry, I'll just have to
Side note
because I want to get back to your story. But we had my first scene. I was only on for like 10 minutes on in Act One.
Right.
And you know, I'm giving all this information and stuff. And I would, you know, be talking to Elphaba about, you know, about what I am and what this is and what we need from her. And I would look, every time I'd look over to Kara Lindsay, she would just smile like, ooh, the wizard's looking at me. She wasn't really listening to anything I was saying. She was just like, hi, oh my God. And I would look at her and I'd have to put my hand over my mouth. I'd be like, oh, she's just so funny. Go ahead.
She was like so much fun to work with.
She's the best.
She, to me, is like, what's my girl?
Megan Hilton.
Leslie Margarita.
Yeah.
Oh, Leslie.
Well, I love Megan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Megan. That's another one. But the exuberance they put into performances is what I was actually talked to Leslie about this. There are certain performers that you can see the joy in what they do in every piece they've done. And Leslie's like that. I mean, every picture you see, you're like, oh, if she really hates her job.
She's a freak. She's just a freak.
You know? Yeah, I just love her. And that's how I feel about Kara Lindsay is like, you look at her like, this chick is miserable. Like, she hates her job. I'm totally kidding. Because you can't see my face. She loves what she does. Yeah. And it shows. And the joy in performance. And I just love her. But yes. So my mom and I were sitting together, and by the time the end of Act One hit with, you know, the 11 o'clock number, end of Act One, my mom turns to me, she goes, I love this show. I got her.
Yes.
I mean, she's very hard to believe. She really is. She's very, very discerning.
When you make the mom.
So when she was... Listen, she was so pleased. She's like, that Elphaba? Ooh. I said, I know, right? Because I didn't even know. But it was so nice to get that, you know, extra in it. I was like, oh, this is great.
I took my mom to see Wicked. The first two times she saw Wicked, we saw it in New York. And like my mom, you know, I mean, my mom's 85 now, but even still, if I said, do you want to go 2 hours ahead of time to play the lottery, she would come with me. And so we waited, we played the lottery, we didn't win, so we went in and we bought cancellation, and we were like eighth row center. And saw the first time we saw Carrie Ellis, Kendra Kassebaum, and the love of my life, Aaron Tveit as Fiero came out on the cart, and I was like, oh, good looking guy, opened his mouth to sing, and I was like, yes. And so, you know, we like, yeah, I mean, completely, like, my friends still send me like Aaron Tveit memes because I just go on and on and on and on and on and on about
what him. Is this feeling? I know
he's my future husband. That's but
he's got a voice. I love his voice.
You know, we haven't talked about Ragtime, and that's really gonna bug me because that is a big deal. Well, listen,
have you been
I have not.
Have you?
Oddly enough.
No, but I sing Back to Before a lot.
With Ragtime, I saw you do it here in LA before it went to Broadway.
Yes.
I had a friend in the chorus who called, well, not chorus, in the ensemble who called me, Crystal Williams.
Loved her.
And she's like, I'm doing this. Isn't she a sweetheart? She's like, I'm doing this show. Do you want to come? She's like, I'm doing the show. It's a new show, and we need an audience. We're doing, I think it was like a tech or something that day.
First, I think we did like a dress.
Or a dress?
Like
a,
yeah, it was like the final
dress. It was
dress
a dress tech.
We had invited some friends and stuff, yeah.
Right. She's like, do you want to come down and see it? I'm like, sure. Come down and see it. Did not know what I was in for. Did not know. First of all, their dress tech was amazing. They only stopped once, and that was in the beginning because the big viewer didn't work correctly when it came down. That was the only time they stopped. They just Yeah, I was like, this is a good show. So it didn't do what it was supposed to do, so they reset and they did it again, and you guys were phenomenal.
And by the way, I was hanging upside down.
I know.
That happened.
Listen, your entrance, the whole, I can't even speak correctly, but that show really kind of shifted something in me, because it was so beautifully done and so well written. And that entire, the cast, you guys were just.
Yeah, great group. It was a great
sobbing.
Group.
Sobbing.
I think it's
I've never sat in a it's exquisite. Literally have never sat in a show and just sobbed. Like, I've never done that. And I mean, we've seen a lot of shows. I've sobbed on stage, obviously, but I mean, to be part, to watch the story unfold and the things that went on, it was just so beautifully done. But I do remember looking in my program and I saw your picture and I'm like, where do I know this guy from? And it didn't click then. I was like, I know him. Where do I know him from? And I think we even talked afterwards and I was like, I know you. And I just don't know where I know you from.
Fair.
Yeah. Well, we figured that out after, you know, X amount of years later, we figured that out. But it was funny at the time because you're like, no.
I just didn't know you. It's, you know what, though, in my defense, it's because I had to hang upside down for so long.
Oh, look.
Before my entrance.
That's
so I think it did something to my, jarred my memory. I actually.
Well, I didn't remember either.
I had to go to therapy about my entrance because I was so terrified. I had to go, like, I had to walk up the catwalk up to 60 feet above the stage. And then they, you know, I was wearing I had to wear a harness and straight jacket.
Right.
And then I had the techie guy, like, hooked my feet up to the, you know, the drop. And then I was hanging upside down like a bat, basically. And I would just watch everything.
That is
you know.
Long. That's a long time to be hanging.
It was. I was. They usually brought me up, like, as New Rochelle people exited. Then I would start. I would take my place, and then I'd watch upside down the Harlem group, and then the immigrants,
right.
And then it would bring me in, and it was trippy. Like it was really like it did something to me, but I loved it. Like everybody was always saying, "Oh, they dropped you on your head yet?" I was like, "I have nightmares."
Not funny.
I know, but it really was I was thrilled to be in that show. And so the weird thing was is that we opened the Toronto company. That was coming to Broadway had opened in Toronto, and then they opened our LA company while they were still in Toronto. So then they brought in Brian Stokes Mitchell and to open it with us. And then it was a little bass backwards because we kind of stole a lot of the thunder from the Broadway company. And we got all these great reviews. And then when it opened on Broadway, the New York critics there had seen all the great reviews and they don't want to be told what's great before it gets to New York, you know? And so I didn't really pay off for them because I think that show should be up in the top 10 all greatest shows of all time. I think it's beautifully constructed. I think how they took that, Doctorow novel and made a musical out of it. It's so dense. It's so dense. It's so packed with events and characters. And they did such a spectacular job. Terrence McNally, may he rest in peace. Steve Flaherty and Lynn Ahrens. I mean, I just thought it was just a beautiful masterpiece. And it was fun. They were still working on the construction of the show with us. We, Houdini and Evelyn Nesbitt, we went through two different duets. They had tried two different other duets on us, and then eventually we ended up just doing reprises of our earlier stuff, much to my disappointment. But, you know, they were just trying to figure it out, you know.
Yeah.
So it was fun to be
beautiful
part of the process.
Show.
Yeah,
yeah, beautiful show. Yeah, absolutely beautiful show.
I loved it. I've been actually... I've ended friendships with people that didn't like Ragtime. I were like, you are crazy. You cannot not
how
like
can
Ragtime.
Yeah, how can anybody not like Ragtime?
You know, people
it's
are funny.
It's beautiful.
After the show, somebody came up to me and said, I'm really offended at how the Irish man is depicted in this show. And it was like, really?
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 That's your takeaway.
That's your takeaway from the entire piece.
Irish at it.
Okay.
Oh, people.
That's your takeaway.
I agree. LaShawn's was stunning.
I can't. And first of all, she's one of my sheroes, I will say, in the theater. There are several. And I was so excited to see her on the stage. I was like, oh my God, it's LaShawn's. It's a show. Nobody understood my joy. No one near me. Was the LA production supposed to be just an LA production, or was it supposed to move to Broadway, or were they, because I'm, like you said, it's kind of a little backwards, it seems like.
No, the Toronto company all had Broadway contracts. Then they opened the LA company. I think it was about almost 6 months before the Broadway company opened.
Yeah.
So I'm sure the Toronto company, I had a couple friends and they were a little ticked off, like, I can't believe they're opening this LA company before we even get to Broadway with a whole new, and they, yeah. By the way, Garth Drabinsky, the producer, flew our entire company to Toronto for our costume fittings, and we all saw the show. We got to see the show. And you know, how weird for them that we were all coming in and watching them. And then we're going back, and we had a 6 week production rehearsal period. And so, yeah, they spared no expense. It was eccentric, but I was grateful to be part of it. That whole process was amazing. It was just amazing.
Wonderful.
And now Houdini's been kind of demoted in the show. He's kind of now cast out of the chorus. And so when I tell people I played Houdini, you know, because it was a cool part before. And now it's like,
yes,
a little smaller. So people go, oh, that's nice. And I'm like, well, now, wait a second.
No, you don't understand. No, I thought you were fabulous.
Thank you.
You were fabulous. Yeah, it's
we all keep in touch.
That show just got me.
You know,
it was really cool. And then
Barbara Streisand came backstage. Everybody came because it was like LA opening, and people got so excited for, you know, new shows here. And it was such a deal. And I had to come out in the audience at the top of Act Two. I came out and shook people's hands and stuff because I did like a huge magic trick. And then I ended up in the pit as conducting the orchestra. It was a great trick.
Yeah.
And so I turned and shook hands, and the opening night, I shook Jennifer Aniston's hand, Roddy McDowell, Eva Marie Saint.
Nice.
And there, I know, it was just, at each person, I was like, I'm trying to, like, you know, stay in my Houdini character. And it was kind of overwhelming. But Barbara Streisand came to the show, and she came backstage to use the John. And it was really amazing. And she was standing, I was going to take my place in at the catwalk, and I had my straitjacket on, as one does. And there's James Brolin and this big burly guy, obviously her bodyguard. And one of the new Rochelle people said, Barbara Streisand's in the John. So I just stood there like nonchalantly waiting for her to come out in my straight jacket. I was just kind of like trying to pretend like I had other things going on. And so, I know, it was crazy. And so the stage manager was like, Jason, you need to get up to your place now. And I was like, one moment. Barbara Streisand's in the John. I've waited my entire life to see Barbara Streisand. So she came out, finally she came out, and I just kind of said hi, and she went, hello. And that was kind of it. That was our thing. Then she came back, then she walked through our backstage for after she left the show, at the end of the show, and she walked by my dressing room and looked in, and I waved. And that was it. That was my connection with Barbara Streisand.
Still, it's more than mine.
I was going to say, not everybody can say that. So.
Right?
Take that, Barbara.
So, Wicked.
Yeah.
Wicked.
Deals.
Wicked.
Wicked. Wicked.
Wicked. Wicked.
See, I can't do that today. Nope.
So it's quarantine. Got quarantine throat.
Quarantine throat. Yep. Yes.
But I listen to those girls. I just don't know how they do it. I don't know how they, I mean, that's to amazing. Start with Wizard and I, that Wizard and I is hard.
Yeah.
My God. Yeah. And that's the first song. That's like their warm-up
yeah.
song.
Yeah,
the warm-up. And it gets worse and worse. It's yeah. harder and harder.
Well, and that's And that's what I was telling my mom when she was like, ooh, she's good. I'm like, Wizard and I? Not that it's not a horrible song. I'm not trying to say that. But I was like, end of act one.
Just wait.
Okay. It's been a year, almost a year since it closed. I closed in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And I did it for a year and a half. So I guess what was that, 2018, 2019?
When you...
Yeah, I saw it into it.
When you went into, like, were you familiar with the show before? Were you familiar with the book? Were you familiar with the show before you went into the show? Had you seen the show?
Yes, I saw it. I actually had Stephen Schwartz's house seats, and it was right before the Tony Awards when I saw it. And, you know, it was amazing. Joel Gray's a bit of a hero of mine. I mean, growing up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, we weren't exposed to lots of musical theater in the 60s and 70s. And, you know, Cabaret was it. You know, the movie of Cabaret was like, and Joel Gray spoke to me. I went, oh, God. And then, so he was everything to me. So, you know, I went and saw it, loving him, and my takeaway from it was that I didn't think this was vintage Joel Gray, what I saw him do in Wicked, but I loved the book. It was, of course, a great Stephen Schwartz score. I thought it was so exciting to look at. The storytelling of it is just what blew me away.
Yeah.
I just was there from the beginning, and I just thought, God, this is funny, and yet I can't get enough of it. It's like the pre-story, and I loved all of that. And I thought, at that time when I saw it, when it opened, I thought, gee, I'd probably be a good Bach, you know? I probably could play Bach. It's like kind of a good part for me, although it's a little high, but whatever. And I didn't really even look at the Wizard as like, oh, this would be a great part for me to play, as I usually do for all Joel Gray parts. And so then I just kind of put it aside and didn't really think about the show. And then when it came out here, I kind of did stuff when they did this. The first time I think it came out here when Eden Espinosa and Megan were doing it, and David Garrison was the Wizard. And I did a lot of their benefits, and I would sing Popular. I sang Popular to Stephen Schwartz, and I have that on my YouTube channel. It's slightly amusing.
Oh, I'm going to go look at that.
Yeah, I think you might get a kick out of it. We did it for a big Actors Fund Stephen Schwartz birthday party. So they had me sing, and a lot of Wicked people were there, but they had me sing Popular. So I sang it to Stephen Schwartz, who was sitting on stage. And sometimes he's looking at me like, what an asshole. And but it's pretty funny. He's really good natured about it. But every so often you can just really see him just going, all right, already. And but it was really fun. And I did a couple of their events, and I sang it to Megan Hilty, which is also somewhere on YouTube. I sing Popular to Megan Hilty, which was kind of hilarious too. But so, you know, I was just kind of in on the side a little bit, and I'd worked with Stephen Schwartz. I've done some concerts with him. So I had a relationship with him and just love him so much. And I had done a show years ago that Winnie Holtzman wrote with David Evans called Birds of Paradise that was ran off Broadway at the Promenade Theater. And I did all the workshops and presentations of that. And so I had a little bit of a relationship with those people. So coming into it, I had not read the book, but I had seen the show 14 years before or something mm-hmm. like that. So I kind of came in as a blank slate, basically. And I got the thing from a video audition, and, you know, they're the ones that got me to stop dyeing my hair. So that was really good. They said, you're going to have to stop dyeing my hair, which they could tell from a video audition. So I thought, ooh, I guess I stop dyeing my hair if they can tell. So they helped me take that step. But it was, It was thrilling. It was thrilling to be part of the show. It was thrilling. Every night felt like an opening night because the audience was so incredibly excited to be there. People loved that show so much. And everybody, like you guys, talking about your experiences with it, you remember when you saw it, what everything. The situation was, who you were with, where you were sitting. I mean, it's a huge event in people's lives. And, you know, I haven't been in a show like that. I've been in some hits. I've been in stuff, but I've not been in anything like this. And so I felt the pressure and the responsibility and the pride to be part of it. And for a year and a half, I was pretty much thrilled every single night to get to perform this thing, you know. As I got him, the Wizard of Oz, I don't want to fuck this up.
right.
You guys, this has been a kick in the pants.
So fun. So great to meet you.
I loved talking to you. It was just like a little siesta. I wish we could all see each other in person with a glass of wine, but that's the next time.
Next time. We'll do our live show from LA next time I can get there.
Or live from my backyard. You can come to my backyard. We'll sit there.
I love backyards.
I'm enjoying
it. Cool. Works for me.
This was really fun. You both are delightful, and I'm thrilled you asked me to be part of your podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been really, really fun. And thank you for all the great stories and indulging me on my Lucky Charms craziness.
That is intense. Your love of the Lucky Charm.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today on Broadway Babies. Thank you, Jason Graw, for coming in. What show are we doing?
Stephanie, are you drunk? Are you drinking?
Yes. Yes. Thanks. So, for Broadway Babies, this is Stephanie Anderson.
I'm Noelle Hannibal. I will see you next time.
We'll see you again real soon.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.